Okay, and I'm going to let people in. So, that all.
Family's surprising portrayal of Blanche heightens investigators' suspicions.
Good evening, everyone. We're just going to get folks entered in. There's a poll on the screen, which I can see some of you are already used to this routine and are filling in the poll. So please feel free to do that. That's wonderful.
Right.
5:30. I'm
Okay.
just going to wait another minute just for individuals to join our session today. Hi, everyone. I'm Susan Walsh. I'm the President and CEO for Northumberland Hills Hospital, and I'm going to be your moderator for this session today.
Oh, good. Cool.
So we have about 27 folks that are in the room, and we do have a poll that's on your screen. And once we've got a good critical mass, I will then put up the second poll that we have. We have two polls this evening to get us started off. Wonderful to see so many participants.
Yeah.
Oh, but now it stopped.
Okay, so I'm going to end the first poll and then we will share the results with you shortly. So I'm just going to end the first poll. I'm now going to put up the second. Actually, I'm going to share the results. Oh, sorry, I'm going to put this one launch. So this is the second poll that we have this evening. You're such a great audience. You keep getting right in there. This is you for those, some of you must have been here before because you know this is part of the routine. Twenty-two of 25. We'll get a couple more and then we will. Okay, that's a good critical mass. All right. I'm going to launch the results for the first poll. So the first poll was, how often do you consciously focus on breathing during the day? And the majority, 55%, stated occasionally, 20% never. I only when I'm stressed is 5% and multiple times a day, 20%. So already this is something that I can see individuals understand the value of our breath and breathing. And I'm going to go back and I'm going to share with you the poll, the second question. So which benefit of breath work are you most interested in? And, we have all of the above. So it's an audience is really interested in this topic. Better sleep, improved focus, emotional balance, energy boost. So that's wonderful. So thank you. Thank you for taking the time to do that host. Welcome to our PACE Talks. As many of you have probably been to a PACE Talk before, there's a few housekeeping pieces that I wanted to share with you before we introduce our speakers for today. So many of you know that PACE Talks have been in, we've been doing this for probably over 9 years. And today our topic is breathe better, live better, discover the power of your breath to enhance focus, sleep, and mood naturally. And we've got a couple of great speakers today, whom I will introduce shortly. But just a little bit of background about PACE. PACE is a collaborative effort between the Community Health Centres of Northumberland, NHH, which is Northumberland Hills Hospital, the Ontario Health Team of Northumberland, the Family Health Team in Northumberland, IM Care and Community Care Northumberland. And really, it's an opportunity to start a conversation about a topic of interest. It is not intended to be medical advice. This is something that our speakers do. They volunteer their time. This is no zero cost. We don't, this is not about solicitation. And we try to stay away from any policies or politics in these conversations. And so it's really just a great opportunity to hear different individuals who have specialty areas of their field, and they will talk to you about topics that are important, for us to just have some knowledge and awareness about. We will probably start today. We'll have about 25 minutes of the formal presentation, and then we will go into our Q&A period, which I'm happy to facilitate for our speakers today. So it's a real treat for you today. We have two excellent individuals, Dr. Anuja Sharma and Randy Stone. And I'm just going to provide some brief introduction of both individuals. So Anuja is an internal medicine specialist with IM Care. And Dr. Sharma has been practicing medicine since 1996. Her interests include diseases of the skin, thyroid disorders, osteoporosis, arthritis, health, and wellness. And she's a wonderful individual, and I've had the pleasure of hearing Anuja speak on many occasions, and I know that you're in for a treat today. Equally as wonderful is Randy Stone. Randy is somebody I've known for a number of years, and Randy is an applied neurology informed Buteyko certified breathwork facilitator and an excellent registered massage therapist with over a decade of experience supporting musculoskeletal and nervous system health.
Oh,
Randy
hello.
specializes in helping the population regulate stress, restore energy, and reconnect with their bodies. Randy blends functional breathwork with lived experience to offer practical tools for calm, clarity, and long-term resistance. And on a personal note, I would say that there's a quality of both these speakers today that is common, and that is they're both very open-minded, curious individuals who like to ask a lot of questions, and as a result, have very varied knowledge about many subjects. So you're in for a real treat. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Dr. Sharma Anuja, to start off our conversation today. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan, and welcome everyone. It's really a privilege and an honor. And today, as much as I'm a physician with deep interest in wellness and preventive medicine, I recognize the power of the prescription pad, and yet I feel that the power and impact of small changes and small things in our life that are sometimes overlooked is incrementally more. So what I'm talking about is mindfulness, exercise, sleep, nutrition, and now let's talk about breath work. And I'm really here as a curious clinician. I feel that I am comfortable being on this spot only because I have read multiple books on breath work and breathing and spent over 50 hours going through the research studies and distilled the information in them to be able to present that to you in a compact way. So I won't bore you with research studies, but I just want to share that I'm just a curious fellow human being today who has experienced the stress and strain of this busy life. And I'm really delighted to have Randy Stone join me. She's a local breathwork expert, as you know, and also a massage therapist. And together, we will share the biology and behaviors that can help improve the quality of your life with some tools. So let's see. All right. So let's talk about breathing. So the framework for today's talk is really about focusing on five things. And if I talk too much about carbon dioxide, nitric oxide, diaphragm, please do stop me, Susan, and interrupt me. But I do want you to get familiar with those phrases and terms, because those are critical in our understanding of how the body works and how breathing works. And then Randy is going to take over and show you how to implement some of the evidence-based tools, which include the brief structured breathing exercises for 24-hour improvement in your stress level, as well as improved moods. So let's see. We will take, an average person takes about 25,000 breaths in a day. And in the next half hour time with us, we will take about 500 breaths. Let's see if we can, by the end of those breaths, we can understand why we breathe, how we breathe, and how can we make it better. So breath influences every emotion. And in turn, every breath can impact our emotion. So let's take a pause, not to change anything, but to see, just to observe, become aware. Let's think about what happens when somebody says, "I love you." We take a sigh, a slow breath air out. And what happens when somebody sideswipes us in traffic, or we miss a step or trip over something? We gasp and we hold our breath. We take a breath in. So breath has a deep connection to the brain and the body, but we mainly breathe evolutionarily as well as in the present time to get energy. As when we get oxygen, which is 21% of the air we breathe into our body, it allows the sugar and fat to burn to provide 16 times more energy than without it. So that is one of the most important functions of breathing, but it also balances the nervous system by regulating the acidity and alkalinity of the brain, by allowing the oxygen to get into parts of the brain that require it the most. Breath is our most primitive connection to the world with the sense of smell. So those are only a fraction of the functions of breathing. There are apparently 30 listed. I couldn't find all of them, but these would be the ones we are mostly concerned with. So what happens when we breathe? Air gets in. We have this muscle called diaphragm at the bottom of our lungs, and the diaphragm contracts to pull down the space and creates an opening of the airways and the air sacs, and also supports the heart by opening up the sac in which it sits, kind of easing the blood circulation into it. And as we exhale, our lungs contract and we breathe out. So when we look at the molecular level, what is happening is two little molecules of atoms of oxygen come together to make a molecule of oxygen, and they hop on the transport bus, which is in our red cells, to be taken in the tubes of our body to different parts like the brain, the muscle, the organs, to supply them with this lovely nutrient. Now, there are many ways people breathe, and the best way to breathe is considered one where we engage our diaphragm, move it down, As the diaphragm goes slowly up and down, it also balances the nervous system because it massages the vagus nerve. But if we breathe on the upper chest, so let's do an experiment. Take a breath in from your mouth and breathe out. And now close your mouth, just breathe through your nose and take a breath in, bulging your lower abdomen and breathe out slowly. The upper breath creates a state of alert and stress. But when we breathe from our diaphragm and we breathe slow and low, our breathing creates more calm and brings us into a rest and recovery and healing mode. Let's talk about what happens on a cellular level. And as I as we mentioned in the framework of the talk, carbon dioxide is something that was considered a waste product. So when I was in high school and maybe early med school, we were taught that, we breathe in to get oxygen, breathe out to get rid of the carbon dioxide. So really, carbon dioxide holds the key to unlock the entry of oxygen into the cells. So then the cells can use the oxygen to burn the sugar and the fat and give energy for all the work we have to do. If there is less carbon dioxide, the bus that takes oxygen to the cells does not offload the passenger oxygen. It needs to swap it for carbon dioxide. So nature has made a fantastically beautiful system where the cells that are metabolizing and doing the work are the ones producing carbon dioxide. And where there is carbon dioxide, there is release of oxygen. So it's not just going willy-nilly to every part of our body. It is going in a very regulated way to specific areas where there is carbon dioxide. So the problem with, breathing, deep breathing and overbreathing and chest breathing is that we can lose more carbon dioxide than is good for us. So we need to respect the importance of carbon dioxide because it is necessary to provide the release of oxygen. Because when the oxygen molecule sits in that transport bus, it's really stuck to its seats. And carbon dioxide works as sort of the divorce lawyer or the key to open the door of the bus, release oxygen, and then it hops on into the bus to go back to the lungs to be released from our body. But if we overbreathe, we can lower the levels of carbon dioxide, which can also create narrowing of the tubes in our brain and in our muscles and body. So you may have lots of oxygen in the body, but the tubes are too narrow and oxygen is too tightly bound to the hemoglobin that it's not going to get into our brain, not going to get into our muscle. We're going to have brain fog, muscle fatigue, and just not feel good. So, I think body systems are finely regulated. And if we just pay attention to them and focus on how we breathe, like when we breathe with a deep gasp and we were stressed. Last time I was feeling worried about something, and I noticed my breath was like I was just huffing for no reason at all. And it's just a physiologic thing. We just do it out of stress and strain. But being mindful, and Randy and I were talking about if we can just become aware of how we breathe, I think knowing what we know, we can feel much better very quickly. So one of the most important realizations in the last few years is about nasal breathing. So our mouths are for eating, nose is for breathing. And When we breathe through the nose, we're basically opening up an entire pharmacy of our body to moisturize, humidify, cool, or warm the air. So, if you've seen how our noses are designed for people who come from more temperate climates, their noses are long and narrow to allow air to enter and warm up before they get to the lungs. But if you see people from tropical countries like Africa, their noses are short and wide because they don't need to spend that much energy to warm or, change the moisture content. A really, really important function of the nose and the turbinates in our inside our nostril is the production of nitric oxide. So nitric oxide is different from nitrous oxide, which is the laughing gas. Nitric oxide is produced in our nostrils. So the largest production of nitric oxide occurs in our no nose. And what is important about nitric oxide is that it's antibacterial, so it disinfects the air. And I'm surprised I didn't know about it during the pandemic. The other important function of nitric oxide is that it helps to relax and open the tubes of that bring blood to our lungs. So it allows us to circulate air in those parts. So the air
Pretty
that you
much a
breathe through the
medical thing,
nose
not a
is
spiritual.
causing opening of the blood vessels that are bringing blood to that part of the lung, causing 18% more efficient breathing. So there is better extraction of oxygen from the air in the lungs when nitric oxide from the nose goes into our lungs. And in fact, I was reading about ventilators. So when people are on a ventilator, they do get a little bit of nitric oxide because it helps with oxygen. It makes so much sense. I don't think I paid attention to it when I was in my training in the 90s. And then because of the narrow passages, I was talking to my son about how nasal breathing is so good. And we were wondering, how does it engage the diaphragm? Because we want our diaphragm to be engaged and to be doing much of the excursion so that air can go into the lower lungs, which is where the circulation of blood is more robust, just out of gravity, right? So when air comes in through these narrow passages, it also gives the body time to let the diaphragm engage and work because it's a stronger muscle than our chest muscles. And lastly, I want to talk about how our breath and brain are connected. So think of the brain as having two gears. We have the rest and digest gear when we are breathing slowly and our body is relaxed. We are digesting. We are also more virtuous and compassionate in this state. And the other gear is when our body's under threat or we want to accomplish something. I want to make this dinner for 10 people and I'm all energized and we're doing all the work. So the pupils are dilated, breathing more, our heart rate's faster. It can also happen when you're stressed. And often there are studies done in people who are in that state who are less willing to help. So they are less virtuous. If we want to be in this state, because of our stressful lifestyle, we can very quickly enter the rest and digest state by slowing down our breath, by prolonging our exhale. So we talked about breathing low and slow. We talked about using our nose for breathing. We talked about being aware of how we are breathing when we are stressed, when we are normal, when we are trying to sleep. And one thing I wanted to mention was nitric oxide production is increased sixfold if we if you're just humming. So 5 minutes of humming can give you a lot more nitric oxide for all its inherent benefits. And the last thing I want to talk about is the study, the evidence for a 5 minute tool, a 5 minute exercise that we can use for 24-hour improvement in stress and improvement in mood. And just before we get there, sorry. Before we get there, I just wanted to say that as we integrate breath work into our life, just remember, like anything, start small. If you have underlying health conditions or are unsure, just check with your doctor. And remember, breath work is not a cure-all. We still need immunizations. We still need surgery for certain things. We need lung specialists for many of the conditions. And it's just a complement for overall wellness to wholesome food, sleep, exercise, social connection. So the study that I was most impressed with is was done by two doctors at Stanford University, Dr. Andrew Huberman and Dr. David Spiegel. They took 111 healthy subjects and gave them 5 minutes of breath work of four different types. They use cyclic sighing, where you take two breaths with a soft exhale. Box breathing that many of you might know, where you inhale, hold, breathe out, and hold for the same amount of time. It could be 2 seconds, 3 seconds, or 5 seconds. And then there was one other breath exercise where they had them breathe a lot and then hold. And they compared these three types of breath work with meditation. And at the end of a month, they found that the most effective way to reduce stress and improve mood is cyclic sighing. So, this is the most evidence-based finding that is heartening, and I think there's more studies, more evidence coming. And I will pass this on the baton to Randy to go over the practical tips. And before I do that, I want to take the time to really share my admiration and appreciation for this very incredible system of, breathing as a steward for our body, which provides us with oxygen like a faithful courier. It navigates our nervous system gears like a pilot, connects us with the world around us with the sense of smell, and like an alchemist, balances the acidity level so that our systems and enzymes can function really well. And with that, I will pass you on to Randy.
Thank you. You said that beautifully, and I'd have to agree with you. So hello everybody and welcome. My name is Randy Stone. I'm originally kinesiologist, moved into massage therapy, and now I am into the breathwork world. Why, you might ask? I can give you a little bit of my backstory in that about, I guess we're 2020, and I came across a situation where I was unfortunately became ill. I won't get into the details, but in a nutshell, I was put on the couch for about 4 months, having difficulty walking across a room without having to take breaks. And when I reflected back onto my situation, I realized that one of the main symptoms that I had was that I was having a hard time breathing. And that originally started actually at the Santa Claus parade. So every year that that originally happens, we just give everybody a great big hug because it was a very big unknown at that point. But thankfully, with as said previously, awareness is key. I think out of all of this, that to me is the main message, is awareness of breath. It can give you more than most things can, and I think it's one inlet, one just key moment that you can grasp any time of the day to help you carry on with longevity in this life. And I think at the end of the day, that's one of my main messages as well, is just longevity of independence. And I truly believe in my heart that breath is one of those things that can give us that person, that opportunity. So that being said, I'd also just like to give my favorite version of the nasal breathing, just as a Canadian fun interpretation of how the diaphragm and working with the sinus cavities kind of helps us put into perspective. I always relate it back to a Canadian winter. So you're coming in from the cold, you have your big coat on, and you go straight to the kitchen. You're still going to be cold. That's kind of how you're breathing through your mouth. Nothing's filtered, it's just going straight into your lungs. Versus you come in with all your groceries, maybe you go downstairs, drop off something in your storage, then you had to go drop off maybe something in the laundry that needed to be washed. Then you come up to the kitchen and you're getting warm, so you're starting to shed off your coat, which could very well be have germs on it that is now being your nitric oxide that can help to not bring things further into your lungs. Then you're finally warm. So by the time that the air comes in through your nose, goes through all of those rooms, and then comes down into your lungs, you're actually working yourself into getting that diaphragm to work, come down, as well as the air is nice and moisturized and warm so that we can have nice clean air for our bodies. So I just love the way that you had said that out there. And I just love that interpretation because we have to bring in the Canadian winters. That's who we are. But yes, so overall, I also wanted to bring this important fact up, is that it's about 9.5% of people overall have dysfunctional breathing. It's increased by 30% if you have asthma, and up most, I believe, 75% if you have anxiety. So our breathing as a whole, our story up until this point tells us a lot, which is why taking a moment throughout your day to check in to see how you're breathing makes a difference. Upper chest breathing is something that is not ideal, as we had talked about earlier. Another thing that you want to pay attention to is gasping in between. Frequent sighing is kind of like a call for extra oxygen. If you can hear yourself breathe, this means that you're breathing a little bit too much. And these things can be temporarily rectified, or for long term, as per the study, for 24 hours, if we can notice it and then accommodate accordingly. So for the physiological sigh, I like to say stack your spine. We're gonna have a nice tall sit, and then you're gonna have your head over top of your shoulders. And we'll try 5 rotations of it, because sometimes not everybody has the awareness. So if you do have any questions or concerns, drop it into chat in terms of, am I doing this right? But give it a tries first. We'll check in to see how everybody's doing, and then maybe we could try a few minutes of it to see how on a rotation how we feel. So we're going to take a breath in through our nose. You can kind of see this increase, and then a little bit more for that last little bit of air, and then we exhale through our nose as long as we possibly can. So a few things that this method does. So breath in again. And then we're going to fill it up a little bit more. And then exhale all the way out. Now, traditionally in the study, if you've come across it, they do say to pierce your lips or out through the mouth. It's usually through pierced lips. The reason why they're doing this is for the resistance. But if you are feeling overwhelmed on a regular basis, you're going to end up becoming a little bit more of a mouth breather. And if you're breathing out your mouth, you actually are losing more moisture than you do when you breathe through your nose. So if in terms of my own personal modification, I highly suggest doing it through your nose. Is there any questions about that all? Do you want to try to go through maybe a minute or two of that? Kind of see some faces, kind of can. Okay, we'll try to do some rotations. So cues for this as well is that first breath should kind of sit down here, right? That second breath you'll see up here, and then nice and slow on the way out. All right, so breath in through the nose, and I should say tongue on the roof of your mouth, where your tongue just sits on the back where the ridge line is. This actually helps support the airway that comes from the mouth into the back of the throat. So, tongue on the roof of your mouth, sitting up nice and tall, stacked. Breath in and in again, and then all the way out. Right, breath in. In again, all the way out. Naturally, it should be where you're kind of to the point where you're slightly pushing in at the end, but not overly. We want it to be as relaxed as possible. Breath in again, and all the way out. Lovely. Breath in again, and all the way out. That big breath in, we're going to expand all those little alveolar sacs inside. So breath in, and then in again to fill the sacs, and then all the way out. This is where we're hitting the parasympathetic calming portion of the exhale. And then in and again and all the way out. And with the long exhale, you're also having you build up the carbon dioxide stores so that that exchange with the oxygen takes place. Keep breathing out and then breathe in. Breathe in again, and then all the way out. So, as for the study, 5 minutes of that, we can definitely, that's something that you can do throughout the day or do for a one section. But again, it's one of those things where maybe somebody cuts you off. Maybe you got some bad news and you just need that 24-hour cool down. That is something that can take place. The second one, if we do have enough time, that I wanted to go on, it's very similar, is the mentality of for your sleep is to, so pardon me, is how you sleep in the day is how, or sorry, how you breathe in the day is how you sleep at night, or breathe at night, which helps your sleep. There we go. And so breathing upper chest, fast, audible, is going to have you at nighttime, breathe upper chest, fast, audible. So, one of my favorite practices to do before I go to bed is I will do a 4 second inhale with a 7 second exhale. Now, in traditionally, you want to ease yourself in, so that might look a little bit different to you, but just like the physiological sigh, you'll notice that the inhale is a little bit shorter to the longer exhale. So, we will try again a few of these, all nasal breathing. So, we're going to take a breath in through your nose for one, two, three, four, and then exhale. Three, four, five, six, seven, and then inhale. One, two, three, four, and exhale. Two, three, four, five, six, seven. Inhale. Two, three, four. Exhale. Two, three, four, five, six, seven. And with that, we go through, I go about a 10-minute rotation. Sorry, about 10 minutes. And honestly, I don't most of the time, I don't even last that long. I'm asleep before I get to the 10 minutes. But with that in mind, we're calming down the nervous system. We are, pardon me, that carbon dioxide exchange. I'm making sure that I'm breathing through my nose, so I nasally breathe at nighttime. And it just sets you up for a successful sleep, for deeper REM sleep, so that you wake up more refreshed. Is everyone okay with those? Was there anything in terms of cues that anybody didn't understand?
If I can share one thing, Randy,
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we had talked about the PDF resources that we will upload with our talk on the website at nhh.ca/pace. So you will have access to those resources, some YouTube videos, and of course, you can reach out to Randy for any further questions or specific, visits that you have concerns about. So we need to personalize many of these things. And this is just a general introduction to talks, to the topic of breathing. We haven't talked about many of the breaths, and there is accumulating evidence on anulom vilom breathing and, many of the meditative breaths. But I think both Randy and I agreed on one breath, which is deep and fast is not good because you're breathing out your carbon dioxide and making your acidity level go out of balance.
Absolutely. Yes, the main like when in doubt, I guess like when in doubt, breathe light. Oh, light, low, and slow. That's kind of where you're at. That's the main tagline is breathe light, low, and slow. When in doubt, that's kind of you get heightened otherwise. So when someone just says, just take a deep breath, you can just say, I'm going to take a low exhale. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm going to take a low exhale. But any questions, please do reach out.
And initially, Randy, thank you so much. I think this has probably been one of the most relaxing PACE talks because I think the audience, if they've been participating, would be deriving the benefits of the exercises that you shared. I love the breathing as a steward for our body. That was a really beautiful way of really encapsulating this. We do have a couple of questions that came in, but I would invite the audience to ask any questions that you may have. We have a few minutes for questions, so really looking forward to that interactive portion. I'll get us started with a question that came in from some individuals, and then we'll make you to give you time to actually enter any questions you may have. The question is, what role does breath awareness play in chronic disease management, particularly in conditions like hypertension, heart disease, or chronic pain?
Maybe we can both take that question, Randy, if you want to go
Absolutely.
first, or I'm
Yeah.
happy to go.
For hypertension itself, there's a few different ways. Originally, as Dr. Anuja had mentioned, the carbon dioxide portion of things is also a vasodilator. So, from my understanding, it is that with the tolerance of carbon dioxide, because everybody kind of has a threshold, and when your threshold is hit, your brain tells it to breathe more. So if you don't have that tolerance, it tells you to breathe faster, and then things can tighten up. So with that, focused functional breath work can actually widen those things, which can help with hypertension. In addition to proper use of your diaphragm, creating that proper spacing will also put less pressure inside of this cavity. So therefore, it can aid in those ways as well. In terms of, I guess, it kind of goes hand in hand with heart disease overall, though, and Dr. Nuja might have more to expand on that. In regards to chronic pain, specifically, that's the pre-Bott-Singer complex, I do believe, which is located in the brainstem. super fancy word. There's also your PMRF, which is your premodular reticular formation that also lands in there. And your PMRF, so your pre-Botzinger, has to do with regulating the breathing pattern. The PMRF has to do with, pardon me, pain management. It's kind of one of its many roles is pain management. And within that, it's also located in the brainstem, where the vagus nerve is. So actually stimulating your breath work or working with the vagus nerve, which in turn is breath work. They go hand in hand. What happens is you're able to stimulate, able to clear up. The one way I describe it is you kind of have a window that might have some smears on it. So doing vagus nerve work kind of helps you clean the window to let your brain know what is actually painful or what it is trying to protect you from. So that can help with chronic illness in that it helps regulate your pain because you kind of, your brain then can kind of see what is it that it thinks is painful versus what is my brain trying to modify that because it might be overwhelmed, if that makes sense, and isn't too much.
Dr. Sharma, anything to add with respect to that question?
I think Randy explained it for hypertension, and I just phrase it differently. So, for chronic conditions like high blood pressure and heart disease, what we know is that our stress system, the adrenals, the stress response, the sympathetic gear, when that gear is brought into a balance, we tend to have less cortisol levels. They've shown that our cortisol levels are lower when we are in the parasympathetic state, when we are breathing out, we are creating less of a drive for the body to raise the blood pressure, raise the heart rate, put less strain on the heart and the body. Also, I would add the nasal breathing. So recently there was a podcast by a cardiologist who studied nasal breathing as a way to sort of regress cardiac fibrosis. So scar tissue like changes in the heart can happen in certain conditions, and we're still trying to understand what are some of the things that cause early wear and tear on the heart on some people. But nasal breathing has been shown to be associated with improved odds of that. And this is very preliminary study, clearly used as a complement to good medical care, medications, eating well, wholesome foods, sleep, good interpersonal communication and connection. I think it can be an additional tool because it can reduce the top-down reduction in the overactivity of the amygdala or the stress centers in the body, because it improves the, when we are focusing on our breath, our prefrontal cortex, which is the most advanced piece of our brain, it tends to actually physically become more robust. And when they do functional MRI studies, the size of the amygdala or the stress centers is smaller. And when they measure the cortisol level after interventions like breath, they found that the levels are lower. So I think from breath work, I can definitely see an improvement, which should complement the care of these conditions. And lastly, I would say for pain, whenever I do skin procedures and office procedures in the office, and the most painful part of the process is generally when I'm injecting the numbing medicine. So I would often always ask patients to take a deep breath and then slowly breathe out all the air from their lungs as I'm injecting into them. And many of them will say that, I didn't actually feel that. So there is evidence that when we are in the parasympathetic activation state, we feel less pain.
One of the questions that came through is, Should you be using different breathing techniques based on what your goals are? So, for example, is box breathing better if your goal is anxiety or diaphragmatic breathing? So, are there matches between the type of breathing that you should try to actually achieve the goal that you want? I mean, in our poll, everyone said they want all of it. So, can you tailor your breathing to your goal?
I must say that so far I haven't come across clear evidence for it, and I would restate the need for taking slow exhales and breathing low as the main takeaways from today, but specific advice and insights can be gained by the therapist and people like Randy or other breathwork specialists may be able to guide you. What would you say, Randy?
I'd have to agree with you. It's definitely a specific intention. It's a prescription is the best way to say it. I think all of them are all based on intentionality. So do they all have a role? Yes. But say your diaphragmatic breathing, as you're saying with the focus on the exhale, it's really mentally influenced is the way to say it, because you can do your box breathing, but is your box breathing with a long exhale, or if you're trying to concentrate on that carbon dioxide buildup? So absolutely, there are different techniques for not only preventative, but in the moment, I think both are very important. It's just a matter of the intention of the exercise to the background of the person that needs to have them.
Thank
I
you.
guess it'd be hard to say it in an evidence-based manner, but personalizing it to individual person and trying it and seeing which one fits might be a good way to figure out that answer.
Any questions from our audience today? If you want to raise your hand, we can unmute you and ask a question directly. A lot of information. Oh, Cynthia. Okay, let me just.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, we can hear you. Sorry.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you, ladies. I'm a community respiratory therapist, so I really appreciate because breathing comes up a lot, all these different techniques, so I appreciate all the different ones. One thing I was really curious about was the humming. I'm definitely going to bring that up. I'm going to try that out with some patients, but I just wondered if you had any more information about how that calms the nervous system. Is that a vagal response? Is it something with the vibrations that helps?
Cynthia, I could take that question because I think
Yeah.
I mentioned humming as a
Yes,
way
you
of
did. Yeah.
increasing nitric oxide
Yeah.
production in the
Okay.
nose. And nitric oxide is produced in really tiny amounts, but nose and the sinuses are the greatest source of it.
Right.
And studies have found that when we nose breathe, our breathing is about 18% more efficient in terms of extracting oxygen and releasing carbon dioxide. But at the same time, it opens up the channels and the tubes in our body, lowering the blood pressure and resistance against which the heart has to pump.
Yeah.
When we hum, there is evidence that it raises the nitric oxide release by sixfold. So, as best as I know, there isn't a direct correlation with parasympathetic activation, but it's just with nitric oxide production with
Okay.
its subsequent downstream benefits.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for that.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you. Anyone else have a question for our two panelists today?
And if there isn't one, I'm happy to share a quick tool to get rid of hiccups. But if there's a question, we're happy to try and answer.
We probably have time for one more question. Is there, I'm wondering how, if individuals can share with us how they found, do they, by participating in the exercises that we completed today, did you feel a change in your, did you feel a sense of relaxation? What were the sensations that you felt? Feel free to share in the chat. And Anuja, while folks are thinking about that, perhaps you could share with us the cure for hiccups.
So again, this one comes from Andrew Huberman from Stanford. And I know Mukesh particularly would used to have long periods of hiccups that would last for sometimes 3 days, even through sleep. So many years ago, one of our partners suggested peanut butter, like a spoonful of peanut butter, creamy peanut butter, mostly eaten kind of not without like slowly eating it, just swallowing it. And that seemed to calm down the hiccups many times. But this new intervention makes more sense. And I haven't had a chance to practice it on or recommend it to anyone, but it basically involves the three breath stacks. So the phrenic nerve, which is the nerve that moves our umbrella-like muscle called diaphragm up and down, it sometimes gets tickled or hooked in our rib cage. So essentially taking three breaths, one on top of another, three in breaths. So taking a breath in, and just like Randy said, for the cyclic sighing, take another one, and then take another one on top of it. And then hold for as long as you can and just let out slowly. If the hiccup doesn't resolve with that one time, you can repeat it. But it seems to have evidence-based. Peanut butter was more word of mouth, and it works as well. So for people who love peanut butter, they can try it. And then this one seems harmless enough that I was excited to share it.
Thank you. Nitin said that it slowed me down or relaxed me. It's wonderful. I have to say, when I was doing the exercises, I found the breathing in and then breathing in again. I don't think I found that more difficult than I thought I would, in terms of, 'cause you feel like you're taking a full breath, but then to breathe in and then to go further. And then as you're describing a third time, I found that to be, something you might need to practice. I don't see any other questions. This will be our final call. We are at 6:26. I just want to say thank you to both Dr. Sharma, Anuja Sharma, and Randy Stone for this truly conversation starter about breathing. I hope that you share the information that you gleaned today with your friends and colleagues and family. And as Randy has on her shirt, breathe light, low, and slow. And Anuja, breathing is a steward for our body. I think this is a really wonderful way to enhance our health. As you talked about, Anuja, we need to get adequate good food, sleep, social interaction, exercise, and now I'm adding breathing to that list of things that we need to do. So thanks to the audience for joining us today. It's really great for folks to participate in this. And again, thank you to our guests. Thanks very much. Have a wonderful evening, everyone.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Thank you,
Bye-bye.
everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Remember, your breath is always with you.
Love that one.